Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and a very good afternoon to you. Welcome. It is Judaism 101.9 here with Rabbi Michael Katz. It's a beautiful summer's day here in Johannesburg. And great to be spending some time together with you, talking about things Jewish, things you may know, things you may have forgotten, things you may need to be reminded of, or things that perhaps we have never heard about on this episode of Judaism 101.9, putting you in the picture of what is happening and what these days that we're in commemorate, celebrate, look back on. Came across a number of interesting things about the next couple of days. First of all, let's talk about tomorrow being the 18th of Av. The 18th of Av, if we were to go back 2,602 years ago, something amazing happened in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple. Now, you know that every evening in the temple, the priest would kindle the seven lights of the menorah, and miraculously, although six of the seven candles would burn out, the western lamp, the most western flame, would remain lit until the following evening. So you had all the lamps lit, the seven lamps on each of each branch of the menorah. The most western one would stay lit and would still be burning when the priest came to light the menorah for the next night. An amazing thing. It was miraculous. And this happened, believe it or not, every single day until, you guessed it, until it stopped. And when did it stop? What happened? During the reign of the idolatrous king Ahaz, who was the father of the pious king Chizkiah, this miracle discontinued. The first time the western lamp was found to have been extinguished was on the 18th of Menachem Av, so that's tomorrow. If you go back 2,602 years ago, that's exactly when it stopped. Amazing that that's when the flame stopped burning. Why did it stop burning? Idolatrous kings. Why did it stop burning? Because people leading the Jewish people astray to worship idols, to go against God. It was kind of a sign that the light of the Beit HaMikdash, the light of the temple, that everlasting light was coming to an end and would not be present for us to enjoy and to have. That miracle ceased. On the 17th or the 18th, there is a discrepancy, by the way. There are some who say that it was actually the 17th, but most hold that it was the 18th, which is tomorrow. Now, if I would tell you, in addition to that, that these days, the 17th and 18th of Av, and we like the numbers 17 and 18 in Judaism, of course, because the number 17, if we take it in its numerical value, it adds up to the word Tov. Number 17, we've spoken a lot over the last week about the numbers 9 for the 9th of Av. We've spoken about the number 21 for the 3 weeks. We spoke about the number 15 for Tu B'Av or Chamisha Asar B'Av just a couple of days ago. But now we come to the number 17, Yud Zayin, 17. But did you know that Yud Zayin can be broken up into, if we're going to go on along the line of how Tu B'Av gets its name from 9 plus 6, well, what if we used a tet? What if we used a 9 in the number 17 as well? Well, there we have 9. How do we get to 17? We need 8. But what if you split that up again and you have 6 plus 2? 9 plus 6 plus 2 spells the word Tov, which means good. So the number 17 is a great Jewish number. And that is today's date, the 17th of Av, a day of Tov, of good. And then, of course, I'm speaking to you on Chai FM. The number Chai, Yudchet, is 18. The number 18 is life. The idea of life is encapsulated in Chai, in Yudchet, in 18, and that is tomorrow's date. So these are really, really positive sounding days. But if we were to go back some time and I were to tell you a story that in Israel, Jewish men, women, and children were attacked. They were slaughtered. Scores were injured. Many were killed. They were raped. They were maimed. And this all happened by their Arab neighbors who rioted amidst cries of kill the Jews, of slaughter the Jews. You would imagine, your minds would probably immediately switch to the south of Israel, October the 7th, Simchat Torah, or Shmini Atzeret Simchat Torah, last year. But quite amazingly, if we go back to 1929, I know that's a long time ago, but we go back to 1929, 67 Jewish men, women and children were slaughtered. Scores were wounded, they were raped, and they were maimed by their Arab neighbors in the city known as Hebron. The Arabs rioted for 3 days. Amidst those cries of slaughter the Jews, the killings began on Friday afternoon, the 17th of Av. And most of the victims, unfortunately, lost their lives on Shabbat, the 18th of Av. The survivors, those who survived from the Jewish enclave there in Hebron in 1921, were forced to evacuate to Jerusalem. And the ancient Jewish community of Hebron, which had lived in relative peace in the city for hundreds of years, was not revived until after Israel's capture of Hebron in the 1967 Six-Day War. I think that it's fascinating if we think about that, just to put it into perspective, that first of all, as they say in the classics, this is not our first rodeo. It's not the first time we've been down this path of being attacked, of the same cries of slaughter the Jews, of knowing of the neighbors who suddenly decide that it's time to get rid of the Jewish community from that environment, and then say, but the land was ours anyway. Just remember, we were thrown out of there through this riot and this rampage and this massacre in 1929. And the strange thing is that Hebron is the one place where the Torah not only shows us and tells us about the fact that the land of Israel was something that was promised to God, promised by God to the Jewish people, and Hashem says it's your land, and that is our strongest and most effective claim to the land. But Hebron was something that was paid for in hard-earned cash. It was something that Avraham Avinu, Abram, had paid for as a burial site. He bought the place, he bought the fields around it. He wanted to make sure that it would be intact for him, for his wife Sarah Imenu, when she passed away, for him to be buried there as well, and for his future generations, and to always be a place that would hopefully be peaceful, peace-loving, and accommodate the necessities of a Jewish community in that environment. But there, 1929, the Jews were massacred there and chased out of Hebron to return only after the 1967 Six-Day War. It is amazing how when you hear part of a story, and it seems that in some people's history books, everything only began in 1967, but there was a history before that, and there were people in Hebron, Jews in Hebron, who were massacred there way before 1967. Let's fast forward a little bit to this coming Shabbat. This coming Shabbos is going to be the 20th of Av. The 20th of Av is a very significant date, especially in the Chabad Hasidic calendar. It marks the first printing, first of all, of the Zohar, the fundamental work of Kabbalah, Jewish esoteric and mystical teachings, authored originally by the Talmudic sage Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And the first Zohar was published on this date, on the 20th of Av, in 1558. So some time back, the Zohar, famous book of Kabbalah, of mysticism, was published. But if we go a little bit closer to home, we think about 1944. Exactly 80 years ago, this Shabbos, we commemorate the Yahrzeit of, this is the 80th Yahrzeit, of the legendary Rabbi Levi Yitzchok Schneerson, who was the father of our Lubavitcher Rebbe. He lived from 1878 to 1944. He passed away in a place called Alma-Ata in Kazakhstan. Now, Rabbi Levi Yitzchok was the chief rabbi of Yekaterinoslav, which is currently known as Dnepr or Dnepropetrovsk, and he was arrested and exiled to Kazakhstan by the Stalinist regime because of his work to preserve Jewish life in the Soviet Union. I'll be back to tell you a little bit more about Reb Levi Yitzchok and his fascinating life and works.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Well, Welcome back. We've been talking about Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Schneerson, the father of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, whose 80th Yahrzeit comes up on this coming Shabbos. And you're here with Rabbi Michael Katz on Judaism 101.9. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Schneerson was born in 1878 on the 18th of Nisan in the town of Podrovna near Gomel, to Rabbi Baruch Schneer and Rebbetzin Zelda Rachel Schneerson. Levi Yitzchak was the oldest of four children. He had two brothers, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shalom Shlema, and one sister, Rebbetzin Rada Sima. His father, Rabbi Baruch Schneer, was a great-grandson of the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, known as the Tzemach Tzedek, whose name was Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson. Now, as a small child, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak showed signs of being a real child prodigy. The previous Lubavitcher Rebbe said that already from a young age, his extraordinary talents were discovered. He had mastered Kabbalah, mysticism, Talmud, Hasidic philosophy, and was then ordained as a rabbi by the leading Torah authorities of that time, Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik of Brisk and Rabbi Eliyahu Chaim Meisel of Lodz. In 1900, at the age of 22, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak was already well known as a great scholar, and his fame and appeal to everybody had already become quite well known. He married Rebbetzin Chana Yanovsky, the daughter of Rabbi Meir Shlomo Yanovsky, the rabbi of Nikolaev and a chassid of the Rebbe Maharash, the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe. Young Rebbetzin Chana was known in her own right to be a great scholar. Rabbi Sholem Dovber Schneerson, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, was actually the Shadchan. He had suggested this shidduch for Rebbetzin Chana Yanovsky to be married to Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Schneerson. And their wedding took place on the 11th of Sivan in Nikolaev, where Rabbi Levi Yitzchak and Rebbetzin Chana would remain for almost a decade afterwards. The couple, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak and Rebbetzin Chana, gave birth to three sons. Three sons, Menachem Mendel, Dovber, and Yisrael Ariel Leib. The eldest son, Menachem Mendel, who was born on the 11th of Nisan in 1902, would grow up to become the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe, who we just know as the Rebbe. At the age of 31 in 1909, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak was called upon to serve as the rabbi of the Ukrainian city of Yekaterinoslav, today known as Dnepr or Dnepropetrovsk. And the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Sholem Dovber Schneerson, was instrumental in securing this position for him. He sent letters to various community leaders, including Sergei Pavlov Falei, one of the city's most respected members of the Zionist movement. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak also met with Menachem Ussishkin, a community activist who had served as secretary of the first Zionist Congress. And following his appointment as rabbi, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak assumed the position as chief rabbi and served the community until 1939. Now, besides for a small Hasidic constituency, the Jewish community of Yekaterinoslav at the time included many, many non-religious professionals who also held Reb Levi Yitzchak in great esteem, and his wife, Rebbetzin Chana, who had gained a fluency in several languages, contributed to her husband's success and influence as a communal leader. Now, this, we have to remark, was something that she passed on to her sons. In her book called A Mother of Israel, she describes how her sons, that is the Rebbe, Menachem Mendel, Dovber, and Yisrael Ariel Leib, would challenge each other in learning languages. Now, you and I possibly have mastered one language that we think we can speak quite well. We may have a couple of others, perhaps, but they would challenge each other to learn new languages. And how did they do this? Well, the strange thing was that their only way of learning a new language was from a dictionary. So they would take a dictionary out of the library, and they would sit down and memorize the words in the dictionary, and in that way learn a language. You're going to say, not a very great way to learn a language. And then again, these were really, really religious, frum, Torah observant boys. What were they doing reading dictionaries in German, in French, in all the other languages. Well, the only place they permitted themselves, and they were permitted to read these dictionaries, you guessed it, was when they were in the bathroom. And so these boys challenged each other, and they learnt different languages in the bathroom. And I guess they didn't spend that long time in the bathroom because they had a lot of Torah study to do. And they were learning, memorizing words from dictionaries. And it was said that the Rebbe, Rav Menachem Mendel, had perfected fluency in a language in 3 months, learning from a dictionary. Imagine that. And it was well known, of course, that the Rebbe was fluent in Spanish and in French and in German. Of course, in English, of course, in Hebrew, of course, in Yiddish, a number of other languages, Russian, and so on, that it was just unbelievable. But here, clearly something that he inherited from his great, wonderful mother, who was proficient in many languages as well. It was part of the attraction of this couple as the Rabbi and Rebbetzin in Yekaterinoslav. Now, during his years of leadership, Rabbi Levi Yitzchok engaged in religious activism, never giving in to the ever-growing pressure from the Soviet Union. Remember, they were enforcing communism, ramming it down everybody's throat, and making sure that, for all intents and purposes, religion was stamped out. And he oversaw the building of a new mikveh and clandestinely officiated at weddings and circumcisions when those became banned. One area of particular note was his involvement in the production of kosher for Pesach matzah. Now, what had happened at the time was that all the factories in Russia were owned by the government. Well, this was communism at its best, and it was their policy that set the standard for the matzah production. Yet they knew that the only way to get the Jews to buy the matzahs, they would require a rabbinic authority to provide halachic certification. Now, fascinatingly, they turned to Reb Levi Yitzchok, who was renowned as the chief rabbi of a prominent city, and asked him to give his stamp of approval on the matzahs that they were producing in the Soviet-owned matzah bakeries at the time. He stood up for his rights. He demanded that he be allowed to install his own rabbinic supervisors. Otherwise, he would not offer the certification. They refused, and Reb Levi Yitzchok remained steadfast. He wouldn't budge. He traveled to Moscow eventually and met with Mikhail Kalinin to explain his position. Rabbi Levi Yitzchok's efforts bore fruit, and the Soviets relented. And the Pesach matzah, the Passover matzahs, from then were produced under the proper rabbinic standards, a strong stand taken by an incredible man, Rabbi Levi Yitzchok Schneerson. Now, on the 9th of Nisan in 5699, that was the 28th of March in 1939, at 3 o'clock in the morning, four agents of the NKVD arrived at the Schneerson home, which was at 13 Barikadna Street in Yekaterinoslav. The guards were stationed at all the doors, and they began to search the house. They sifted through thousands of pages of Rabbi Levi Yitzchok's writings on Kabbalah, on mysticism, on halacha, and rabbinic correspondence, and they confiscated his rabbinic ordination certificates and a petition from a community of Jaffa in Israel, who had petitioned that he should immigrate and serve as the chief rabbi there, and with it were the visas for his family. So this was all confiscated, taken as evidence against him. And finally, at 6 o'clock in the morning, they ended their search, and Reb Levi Yitzchok was arrested for his clear activities on behalf of Judaism in the Soviet Union, and of course his subversive activities of trying to keep Judaism alive and stand up for Jewish rights in that environment. And after more than a year of profound torture and interrogation in Stalin's most notorious prisons, Reb Levi Yitzchok was tried in Moscow, and his sentence was 5 years of exile in Central Asia. He was sent off, and Rav Tzanchana followed him to be with him in his remote lokal of exile. The first home of this exile was in a place called Chili, which was a single room. Imagine this, they were placed in a single room together with a Tatar couple who had a young child. This was the room that they had to occupy. The room had no door. It was damp. It was muddy. It was filled with mosquitoes. They lived in extreme poverty and discomfort, and they had absolutely no privacy. There was another couple and a child sharing a tiny little room together with them. And though they never discussed it, they were always hungry. Once they remarked that they hadn't tasted a piece of bread for an entire month. With World War II ravaging Europe, many refugees and displaced people ended up actually in Kazakhstan, where Rabbi Levi Yitzchak had been exiled. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak soon became well known amongst these Jewish refugees and large groups of men and women, especially women whose husbands were taken away for the war, would visit the rabbi and the rabbitson seeking their counsel on various matters. And with meager resources at their disposal and with a constant threat to their very lives, Reb Levi Yitzchak and Rebbetzin Chana heroically reached out to their brethren in need, helping in every possible way, materially and spiritually. It is fascinating to note that this is the kind of example that the Rebbe himself had from his parents, dedicated to community. If you think about it, the idea of a home like they ran in far away Kazakhstan, exiled, forced to be there, of course, has the trimmings and trappings and the flavor of the idea of shluchim, of emissaries being sent to far-flung places, of course, not under duress, of course, not to be in exile, but actually to be there for the Jewish community who either is there or is going to come there by some strange fate, immigration, whatever it may be. And this was the framework of the family of the Lubavitcher Rebbe and this great man who we pay tribute to today, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Schneerson. Be back with you right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. We've been speaking about Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Schneerson, great sage of our generation almost. Passed away in 1944, 80 years ago. This Shabbos, that's what we commemorate on this coming Shabbat. And it's incredible to note that Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Schneerson not only was the father of the Rebbe, but he passed away at the young age of 66. It was 1944, and as Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Schneerson's sentence was nearing its end, unfortunately he contracted a serious illness, a serious disease, and his physical well-being began to deteriorate. He wasn't aware, I guess, of the seriousness of this illness, and living in the stark and difficult conditions as they were in exile, his body became wrecked, severely weakened, and friends in a nearby place called Alma Ata resolved to secure the rabbi's release. What they did was they contributed literally thousands of rubles, giving up most of their wealth, this group of people in Alma Ata, in order to acquire the proper permits for the Rebbe and his wife to relocate. And after 6 weeks, with monstrous setbacks and obstacles, they were finally able to obtain the necessary release documents. And immediately after Pesach, in 1944, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak and Rebbetzin Chana left Chile and arrived in Alma Ata. And in this large city, their living conditions improved a bit, and they worked more vigorously, again, to help others who were in need. Yet through the summer, the Rebbe's illness grew worse. A young friend made a special trip to Leningrad to Alma Ata, together with a well-known doctor. And the doctor did not have a good prognosis for the Rebbe. He had absolutely nothing that he could do for the Rebbe's illness, for his ailment. And the Rebbetzin Levi Yitzchak and Rebbetzin Chana endured those really heartbreaking days with exceptional strength and fortitude. And despite the dire conditions, they continued to welcome any depressed or broken person into their home, attending to his or her specific needs and providing food when necessary. It's also important to note that while they were in exile, while they were in this difficult space, their son, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, had actually gotten married, and they were unable to attend his wedding. They were unable to go, while we had that, unfortunately, of late with the pandemic, where people weren't able to travel to their children's simchas, and we know some people that happened to. It happened here because of these strong, harsh, difficult conditions and the Stalinist regime, that they were not able to be at the Rebbe's wedding. So the Rebbe had his parents in exile. He got married without his parents being present at his wedding. And then on the 20th of Av, Rabbi Levi Yitzchok's condition suddenly turned critical, and although he was no longer able to speak, he continued to murmur words of Torah and Tehillim. And that evening, as Rabbi Tzenchana took a short rest so that she would have the strength to continue caring for him, she woke up startled to find that there were many people in the house. Her husband's holy soul had returned to its maker. We'll be back with you right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Now, during his years as Rabbi of Yekaterinoslav, the Rebbe's father, Rabbi Levi Yitzchok Schneerson, as well as while in exile in Chile, Rabbi Levi Yitzchok had written thousands of manuscripts of Torah analysis and novella, encompassing and intertwining in his unique style Talmud, Halacha, Jewish law, Kabbalah, and Hasidism. Unfortunately, most of these manuscripts were misplaced or destroyed by the communists and the Nazis, respectively. But when she escaped Russia in 1947, Rabbi Tzenchana managed to smuggle out many of the manuscripts that Rabbi Levi Yitzchok had written during his years of exile. At the behest of his son, the Rebbe, these were published in a five-volume set under the title of Likutei Levi Yitzchok. And in his father's memory, the Rebbe would also explain a passage from these teachings at many of his Shabbos Farbrengens. And to this day, Likutei Levi Yitzchok remains one of the most unique works on Kabbalistic thought from the last century. Now, when we think about this incredible man and his incredible life, and we have the most wonderful teachings from Reb Levi Yitzchok Schneerson to emulate him and to live up to his kind of way of living and his standards and so on, I think that we have to remark once again about the fact that here were people who had absolute mesiras nefesh. They had an absolute lack of concern for self. When we study in the Shema that it said, we read this in the Parsha last week, that we have to serve Hashem v'chol levavcha, v'chol nafshecha, v'chol mo'edecha. You got to serve God with all your hearts and with all your soul and with all your might. Rashi tells us that all your soul means until you're prepared to give up your soul. Here were people who were prepared to give up their very lives, everything that they had, and their lives themselves, they were prepared to give up for Torah, for Yiddishkeit, for Judaism, for Jews everywhere, for Jews in the most far-flung places. And it's no surprise, therefore, that they had a son of the caliber of Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, of our Rebbe. He had that kind of a background, that kind of selflessness, that kind of example that parents can only set not by talk, but rather by the very way that they behave, by their sincere devotion to everything that was right and good, proper and Jewish, and to stand up for their rights. And if we think about it, throughout the Rebbe's life, he too was able to really stand up strong for and passionately for things that needed to be done, whether it was within the Jewish community, whether it was without the Jewish community. His strong advice to Israel in times of crisis, in times of difficulty, his idea of reaching out to Jews everywhere, even those who were in the deepest, darkest exiles, whether it was Kazakhstan, where today, by the way, there are thriving Jewish institutions of Torah study and education and Chabad houses and so on. It is absolutely amazing to think that in the most far-flung places in the world, no matter how harsh and how difficult, how far-flung they may be, the Rebbe cared, the Rebbe responded to those people at all times and all the time, making sure that they had their Jewish needs wherever and whoever they happened to be. We'll be back with you right after this to sum up, or we're summing up right now. Okay, this is sum up time. Sorry about that, and I look forward to being back with you again, same time, same place next week. I want to wish you a great rest of the week, a great Shabbat up ahead. And remember, on the Shabbos, to spare a thought, a moment, learn something perhaps from Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Schneerson, and think about the great people who have trodden a great path for us to emulate and to live up to. And we too need to be those kind of leaders to our children, to our grandchildren, to all those who follow on after us. Great Shabbos, a great week ahead. Back with you, same time, same place next week on another exciting installment of Judaism 101.9.